چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini's opinion on religious democracy. One of the most important of the elementary duties when a group tasked over the responsibility of affairs is to bring about conditions for free elections so that under no circumstances their exercise of power and influence of any strata and group in the election. You are free and must hold the destiny of your country in your own hands. Today, the fate of Islam, the destiny of Muslims in Iran, and the destiny of our country is in the hands of the nation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini says that it is incumbent on the gentleman to be on the scene concerning Islamic issues, whether you want to elect or not to elect someone as representative or I should say, President of the Republic. You have no excuse for not being on the scene or for sitting by. There is a very famous saying of Imam Khomeini, and during the revolution and even after the revolution, Imam Khomeini has emphasized on being on the scene, and that's what he is referring to in this part of speech as well. Being on the scene means that you're always in the scene. Your presence in the scene must be in different parts of or different issues of the country. And if a person does not make his presence in the scene, it means that he has given up the right that he had. He has not used his right. He has given a ground to the enemies to enter because he is not in the scene. Therefore, the enemies are coming into the scene. And this is very important to be present in the scene. Therefore, Imam Khomeini is saying that when you elect a member of the parliament or even the president of the republic, when you elect it, you must be on the scene.
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
It is incumbent on all of the people to be on the scene concerning Islamic issues, and the person who they are electing, they should see whether he takes cares about the Islamic issues or not. Because when the revolution is on the basis of Islam, when it is an Islamic revolution, it is important to see whether this person is careful about these or does he cares about the Islamic issues or not. In Islam, when we are following the righteous path and we are following the path of Wilayat Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, when the Imam Khomeini is saying that when he comes from the France, he mentions in reply to a question where they asked him, did you made any constitution for your country or not, for this Islamic revolution or not? Or how much time you're going to take to make a constitution? He replied that the constitution was made 1,400 years ago. We have Quran as the constitution. We have the sayings of the Prophet as the constitution. And that's what we're going to apply in this country. This is an Islamic state. It is an Islamic revolution. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
President Joe Biden will withdraw American combat troops from Afghanistan by 11th of September, declaring an end to the nation's longest war and overruling warnings from his military advisors that the departure could prompt a resurgence of the same threats that sent hundreds of thousands of troops into combat over the past 20 years. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Helen Cooper, Thomas Gibbons Neff, and Eric Schmidt. The piece is titled, Biden to Withdraw All Combat Troops from Afghanistan by 11th of September. President Joe Biden will withdraw American combat forces from Afghanistan by 11th of September this year, declaring an end to the nation's longest war and overruling warnings from his military advisors that the departure could prompt a resurgence of the same threats that sent hundreds of thousands of troops into combat over the past 20 years. In rejecting the Pentagon's push to remain until Afghanistan security forces can assert themselves against the Taliban, Joe Biden forcibly stamped his views on a policy he has long debated but never controlled. Now, after years of arguing against an extended American military presence in Afghanistan, the president is doing things his way, with a deadline set for the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. A senior Biden administration official said the president had come to believe that a conditions-based approach would mean that American troops would never leave Afghanistan. President Biden's decision would pull all American troops out of Afghanistan some 20 years after former President George W. Bush ordered an invasion after the September 11 attacks on New York and the Pentagon. The war was launched with widespread international support, but it became the same long, bloody, unpopular slog that forced the British to withdraw from Afghanistan in the 19th century and the former Soviet Union to retreat in the 20th century. Nearly 2,400 American troops have died in Afghanistan in a conflict that has cost about $2 trillion. Mr. Biden's Democratic supporters in Congress praised the withdrawal, even as Republicans said it would risk American security. The United States went into Afghanistan in 2001 to defeat those who attacked the U.S. on 9/11, Senator Tim Kaine, a Democrat from Virginia, said in a statement. It is now time to bring our troops home, maintain humanitarian and diplomatic support for a partner nation, and refocus American national security on the most pressing challenges we face. John Saltz, an Iraq War veteran and chairman of the Progressive Veterans Group, Vote Vets, said, words cannot adequately express how huge this is for troops and military families who have weathered deployment after deployment with no end in sight for the better part of two decades. President Biden's decision drew fire from Republicans. This is a reckless and dangerous decision, said Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, the ranking Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator Inhofe said, arbitrary deadlines would likely put our troops in danger, jeopardize all the progress we've made, and lead to civil war in Afghanistan, and create a breeding ground for international terrorists. Former President Donald J. Trump had set a withdrawal deadline for of 1st of May, but he was known for announcing and reversing a number of significant foreign policy decisions, and Pentagon officials continued to press for a delay. President Biden, who has long been skeptical of the Afghan deployment, spent his first 3 months in office assessing that timeline. The Afghan central government is unable to halt Taliban advances, and American officials offer a grim assessment of prospects for peace in the country. Still, American intelligence agencies say they do not believe Al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups pose an immediate threat to strike the United States from Afghanistan. That assessment has been critical to the Biden administration as it decided to withdraw most of the remaining U.S. forces from the country. A senior Biden administration official said the troop withdrawal would begin before 1st of May and conclude before the symbolic date of 11th of September. Any attacks on withdrawing NATO troops, the official said, would be met with a forceful response. Meanwhile, Taliban leaders have long pledged that any breach of the deadline means that their forces will again be attacking American and coalition troops. Under a withdrawal deal negotiated during the Trump administration, the Taliban mostly stopped these attacks, but in past weeks, they have rocketed American military bases in Afghanistan, particularly in the south and east of the country. In public statements on Tuesday, 13th of April, Taliban leaders focused not on President Biden's decision for a full withdrawal from Afghanistan, leaving behind a weak central government that has proved incapable of halting insurgent advances around the country, but rather on the fact that the Biden administration was going to miss the 1st of May deadline. Taliban spokesman Zabihullah Mojahed, speaking on local Afghan television, said, "We're not agreeing with the delay after the 1st of May. Any delay after 1st of May is not acceptable to us." The American-led war in Afghanistan was won and lost several times over the past two decades. The initial campaign, in which relatively small numbers of special operation forces partnered with local Afghan militias supported by American airstrikes, was quickly successful in forcing Al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders to flee, mostly into neighboring Pakistan, by late 2001 and early 2002. Many military analysts praised the mission as a good example of planning and war fighting. But then the war evolved and expanded from a counterterrorism mission to one devoted to nation building. But the inability to create effective local security forces in Afghanistan allowed the Taliban to stage a comeback, prompting a significant surge of foreign troops back into the country starting in 2009, an effort that effectively amounted to a second invasion of Afghanistan. Meanwhile, the Biden administration officials are saying that the United States would reposition American troops in the region to keep an eye on Afghanistan and the Taliban, and would hold the Taliban to a commitment that there would not be a reemergence of a terrorist threat on American or Western interests from Afghanistan. but it was unclear what that meant or how far those repositioned forces would go to protect, for example, the fragile Afghan government or Afghanistan's national security forces. The Biden administration officials are saying that some troops would remain in the country to protect American diplomatic presence in Afghanistan, a standard practice. Joe Biden's top aides have said he's keenly aware of the risk of a total security collapse transpiring in Kabul, the Afghan capital, if all Western troops leave the country, and he has privately described a fall of Saigon scenario as haunting. But in private meetings in recent weeks, the president has also questioned whether the small remaining contingent of American forces can accomplish anything after 20 years, during which almost 800,000 U.S. troops have been deployed to Afghanistan, or whether it will ever be possible to bring them home. The cost for the war and reconstruction effort is estimated at about $2 trillion.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In 2003, America entered into a war with a country its citizens could barely locate on the map. War was initiated to find Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, something that was never found and actually never even existed. Yet the American invasion of Iraq let the genie out of the bottle, resulting in hundreds of thousands of deaths, the destruction of a whole nation, and insecurity and instability for a region which is continuing until this day. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. As Washington's beating of the war drums raged, Lorna Tychostoup, a single mother and news and politics editor for a local arts magazine in New York, knowingly risks her life, imprisonment, and even $1 million fine by traveling to Iraq under the threat of war, and on a mission to capture and bring back the face of the Iraqi people for the American public to see.
Then, honestly, I wasn't sure where Iraq was on the map. Nobody I knew where Iraq was on the map. I had never met an Iraqi person, and all I thought was, like, what do they look like? We're going to be killing them. We're going to go to war in a country that I know nothing about, and why? And I really had this sense that if I took enough pictures and I got them in enough places and I showed enough people who the United States would be killing, America America would be killing, that it might help to stop the war from happening. I don't know, I guess I've always been this way. You know, speaking out, I always felt like I was riding the cusp of history. I was watching, I was living history.
You saw the television news pictures of last Saturday's anti-war protest. No one disputes that it was sizable and that, for the most part, it was peaceful.
The United States of America will not permit the world's most dangerous regimes to threaten us with the world's most destructive weapons. Any nation that continues to harbor or support terrorism will be regarded by the United States as a hostile regime.
What if your wife or your mother told you that she was headed to Iraq for 2 weeks? Well, three New York moms who call themselves the Hudson Valley Peace Brigade are headed there tomorrow for a 10-day mission of what they're describing as peace. Are you going to ask them, why did you guys ignore 17 UN resolutions? Why did you guys wait 12 years? Why do you refuse to disarm your nuclear program, your biological and chemical program? Do you plan on asking them that?
No, I don't. I'm going there to see the people. I'm going there because these people aren't going to be liberated. They're going to be annihilated.
This is left-wing propaganda. You know what? America freed the world from the Nazis. We freed the world from totalitarianism, the former Soviet Union. We freed the world of fascism. And we're going to free these people, the ones you care about. They're going to be liberated.
Listen, I think that when you start dividing it into left and right, that's not the issue here.
But you are a leftist.
Why are we here discussing what our labels are? You can label me anything you want to diminish my argument. I don't want to go to Iraq. I'm going to Iraq because, you know, I feel the people like you, the people who have the money, the networks that have the power, how come they're not going to this country and showing us? They only show us the maniac. They don't show us the faces of
the people. Well,
he
is a maniac. I mean, he is a maniac. Let's not put that aside. He is a maniac.
There are families there. I would tell our government to please let the weapons inspectors continue to do their job.
Ladies, I wish you get home safe before the war starts, because war is coming. And I mean that sincerely. I hope you get back safe. And coming up, Secretary Ridge raised the threat level to high today. Does this mean you should stay home and lock the doors?
You know, I had always wanted to be on that show. Because I'll sit here and watch Fox, you know, Hannity and Combs, and want to throw my shoe at the TV half the time. Because they get people, they interrupt them, they berate them, they just get their message, right. So instead, I interrupted them.
Okay, my name is Mona Tychasta. I'm going to Baghdad because, as a photojournalist, I feel it is my responsibility to go there and bring home the face of the Iraqi people to the American public.
I was wondering if you're concerned about being a casualty of your own government.
I think that right now we're all collateral damage. The Wall Street Journal's poll, 73% of the people in this country do not want unilateral attack of Iraq. We love our country. We live here too. We are three mothers. We've got six kids between us. We love those kids. We want to come home.
The community here has been unbelievably supportive. I think partly because these three women are so brave and bold. But, you know, a lot of people can't go to Iraq. A lot of people can't leave their lives. These three people are risking their lives to go to make a very powerful statement.
You're going to Iraq? What?
I'm going to Iraq.
Really?
So that's why they're filming me.
Why are you going to Iraq?
I met Lorne maybe 10 years ago. She was a single mom working as a waitress at a local restaurant.
Because we're going to go there. I'm a journalist, so I'm going to go and take some pictures and bring home some photos and
very brave.
Hopefully maybe stop this war insanity.
Lorna is the editor of the political section of Chronogram, a local magazine of arts, culture, politics, kind of the village voice of the Hudson Valley. Lorna has charisma. She has loads of charisma. Lorna has not gone to journalism school. Lorna has not gone to charm school. What Lorna brings to any situation is this almost animal ferocity. She goes after a story like it's nobody's business. She doesn't stop. She'll keep calling people. She wants to know why. Lorna is somebody who knows how to take care of herself very well. And she had said explicitly to me, I have two kids. I love my life. If the war starts to happen, I'm coming home.
My daughter, Lacey, she's 18 and a half years old.
My son, Josh, is 22 and a half years old. They both go to the University of Binghamton. They're not happy. You know, they're afraid for me. They're afraid for them. Years ago, like in 95, I traveled in Mexico and I kind of fell into the Zapatista revolution. So I came home and I told them about that. So they've been kind of living with, like, this is what their crazy mom, you know, does.
She's always wanted to go places and see things that I guess she felt that people should see. So I guess you just kind of have to go with it.
The pressure, gosh, the pressure of my kids, that is killer. You know, I know my daughter does not want me to go to Iraq.
Like, whose mom goes over there and why? I mean, besides stuff you see on TV, it's not really something typical of people you know.
I got married very young, and I got married, you know, for ridiculous reasons, because I was trying to please and obtain love from my mother. So I did all the good things. I got married, and then a couple of years later, you're supposed to have kids. I paid my dues. Like, I want to do things that I want to do.
She always told us from when we were younger that whatever we wanted to do, we could do it. If we wanted to be a coal miner or an artist or whatever, that she would be supportive. It's interesting now that whatever she's doing, I'll support, but I guess that's how it works. She's, like, definitely an irreplaceable person.
The only road all the way across the desert. I've been told that this is a 12-hour journey. The driver drives 100 miles an hour. This, for me, is probably the scariest part of the trip, because it looks like it's a vast wilderness of unknown territory. And we're going to end up in Baghdad.
I always wanted to go and go to places and see for myself and maybe bring back whatever I saw.
I shot 45 rolls of black and white, 30 rolls of color. I get very close to people, even if I don't have more than a split second to take their shot. I mean, I live with them after that. I take the shot, and then later I see them develop. And they develop within me, and I carry them around. February 15th, we had a 200-person international march for peace. We joined the rest of the world. And at one point, it was really interesting. I mean, somebody turned around to me, and they were like, wow, this is like it. Like, the epicenter of the peace movement comes from Baghdad. And then, of course, you know, to go back to the hotel later that night and find out that, you know, 20 to 30 million people around the world had been doing the same thing.
Today in London, 2 million people have marched against this war. That is one out of every 25 human beings in Britain. In Rome, as we speak, there are another 2 million people marching. And in Spain, the third of George Bush's allies in Europe, there are 1 million people marching against the war.
Producers that I spoke to, she said that at noon on February 15th in New York City, where all these millions of people were totally shutting down, vast amount of blocks, they get a little phone call from NBC saying, cut the live feed.
Our next guest just returned from a two-week peace mission in Iraq. We want to welcome Lorna Tychosta back to the show.
You came back from Baghdad. You stayed there for how long? 2 weeks?
I was in Baghdad.
Okay, now, in my opinion, you seem like a lovely woman, but in my opinion, your visit bordered on treason. What were you thinking going there?
Oh, please. You know, I'm an American. I have a constitution. What makes you think that I should not be able to travel someplace on this planet?
Wait,
we have freedom of speech. This is a free country.
You're telling me
that this is treason?
If you oppose America's policies, that's fine. You can protest here all you want because that's free speech protected under the First Amendment. That's fine.
No, I'm an American.
But to carry your protest to enemy territory when we are on the eve of war seems to me villainous and bordering on treason.
Well, that makes great play here on TV.
But don't you understand that what you did was aiding and abetting the enemy?
Absolutely not. I'm an American.
My going there was illegal. So what is it, up to $1 million and 12 years in jail for going someplace and bringing back the truth?
And I guess it comes down to the fact that if we were all sitting here and we were about to be bombed, I'd certainly want some group to rise up and make it not happen.
I'm in the process of setting up a college tour. I'll go around the country even if I have to and show these photos. And I really think that even people who want war, once they look at these photos, there will be people who will change their minds.
There's nothing in the country.
They have raw sewage floating in the streets. With such poverty, such desolation. You can see the stress in the eyes of every Iraqi person. You see this exhaustion and this fear. And the American public has to go and see. I think they have to go to Iraq and see this for themselves. Don't listen to me. You know, don't take my word on it.
My fellow citizens, at this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger. We will defend our freedom. We will bring freedom to others, and we will prevail. May God bless our country and all who defend her.
I believe in war. I believe there are times when you need to defend your land, your home. I don't think this was one of those times.
I was actually in the dark room the night that we started bombing.
It kind of stunned me that at that point, like a silence swept across the land. It stunned me that I felt I wanted to be silent too. If any of them are dead, they'll still live.
And I think that's why I made so many, so that like everybody who has them, in some way, they won't be forgotten.
I wanted it to be true that the Iraqis were happy we were there, that the fighting was going to stop now, and that we could have peace and things would be better. Like a little kid, I wanted it to be okay.
In Baghdad today, the search continued for Iraq's weapons of mass destruction.
So growing concern here, they won't find the massive quantities of weapons that were the major justification for the war.
The one thing I felt was missing from my work were the stories of the soldiers. That summer, I drove to North Carolina to Camp Lejeune to interview Marines. Half of what I do, or more than half of what I do, is because I take it to the personal. Like, I don't want my kids going to fight some old rich man's war.
Are these Americans who are so frightened that they're sending these children off to fight for them, are they willing to look at the photographs that they bring home of the dead bodies that they've killed? We don't want to look. We don't want to see. Send them off. Let somebody else fight for us so that we'll be safe. I think that that's a crime. I think that's a criminal activity. What do we do? You know, what do we...
We should never win it.
We should never win it.
Good. And just let the country be.
My son was in the invasion and when we invaded Iraq in the beginning of the war. He was a driver of a 3rd Humvee in line going to Baghdad. His battalion was part of the battalion that got pinned down in Nasiriyah for 11 days in a firefight. During the war, didn't sleep. I became a CNN Fox News addict. Finally, I just had to turn the TVs off. He came back with 11 ribbons. A lot of souvenirs, a lot of pictures, a lot of nightmares. To this day, he still has them. Because you don't hear anything about the guys that came back, what's missing, the legs, the arms, and stuff like that. You know, there's nothing in the media, there's nothing in the newspapers, nobody talks about it. What are you going to do? Say a prayer.
You know, I went in the beginning to bring home the face of the Iraqi people. Now I want to go and bring home the face of the soldiers, because that's got to hit home here.
The armored personnel vehicle that I drove around with, I went out on patrol. We left at 3 o'clock in the morning. This is probably the worst experience of my entire life. So we rode around in this heavy-duty tin can that was spewing diesel fuel out of here. Over here, there's a hatch that you can stick your head out of. You want to see the bullets and mortars coming at you. There was no heater in the vehicle. They had had a heater. It had broken. You know, these guys are driving around. It's very cold there, and they don't need your goddamn ribbon. They need you to send them some money for a heater, or at least to write your congressman and your congresswomen and say, could you please make sure our troops are being taken care of over there? And they need letters. They need emails. They love it. They want to know that America even knows they're there. So we rode around the village, you know, waiting to be shot at. You know, we got back around 11 o'clock in the next morning. That night when I tried to sleep, my body hurt more than it's ever hurt from any flu I've ever had in my entire life. And I think it was a combination of riding around in a heavy-duty tin can and also that I had poisoned myself with adrenaline. Because at any given moment, we were told, you know, we could be shot at.
How do they feel?
They're out in the streets. I spoke to some who are terrified. They're being shot at. They're under threat of mortars landing on their bases, car bombs going off around them. You know, most of the ones I spoke to want to come home. And do you know that there's a law that that the Bush administration has enforced? The Clinton administration didn't enforce it. That you cannot film or in any way capture the caskets with the flags on them. We're not allowed to see this. The media is not allowed to capture these images. That's a good question. Well, I don't know. Why? Should you not be seeing death on your TV?
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Thank you for joining us here today. If our esteemed listeners remember, we've been talking about God's justice and wisdom. In some of our previous sessions, we talked about the meaning of justice and wisdom. We said that justice means to place everything in its own proper place. Wisdom means when wisdom is used as a characteristic and a description of actions, not knowledge, it refers to the fact that a certain action is performed in a solid way, in a good way, in a way that the action lasts, the thing created by that action lasts and subsists. We also said that justice is divided into three categories. We also said that there's a necessary relationship between wisdom and justice. In our last session, we were examining some of the reasons for justice and wisdom. We said that God Almighty is absolute perfection, and being absolute perfection, he has to contain within himself all perfections. And we said that justice and wisdom are perfections. Beings who are not just, meaning they're oppressive, or who are not wise, rather they're unwise, are imperfect and deficient. Therefore, we can't attribute oppression or ignorance to God. It's possible for somebody to ask the following question. What is it that a being who is oppressive is imperfect? Why is it that a being that is unwise is imperfect? We can illustrate this by means of an example to help clarify in a tangible way why we say that oppression stems from imperfection or ignorance stems from imperfection. It's very clear that ignorance is imperfection, but injustice, we can help clarify this by means of an example. Let's say that there's a person, he goes and he steals something from somebody. we can examine the reasons for why somebody would steal from somebody or oppress somebody. Sometimes this action might stem simply from the fact that this person might be ignorant of the impropriety of this action that he's doing. It also, ignorance is an imperfection, obviously. It also might stem from the fact that this person knows that this is improper, but he doesn't have any control over himself. He can't control himself. For example, he might have become habituated to this action. He might know it's wrong, but he might have been habituated to it, and he can't control himself. This lack of control, again, is an imperfection. It's a weakness of the will. So we see that this oppression might stem from ignorance. It might stem from weakness of will. Or, for example, let's say that a certain person wants to be good. Let's say that he passes a poor person on the street, and the poor person asks him for money. This is one of those places where the money that's in one's pocket deserves to be given to that person. Why doesn't he give this to this person? He might know it's good, right? He might know it's good, and he might even be a strong-willed person. But it's possible that this person might be stingy. He might be stingy, and therefore, he might not want to give this money to this person. So this act of injustice could stem from ignorance, it could stem from weakness, it could stem from stinginess, it might stem from other imperfections as well. This illustrates the fact that injustice or ignorance always stem from some sort of wisdom. It might also stem from the fact that this person needs this money. He doesn't want to give it away. He feels that he needs this money. All of these are imperfections, and therefore must be rejected as properties of God. God doesn't have any of these imperfections, and therefore he is not unwise and he's not unjust. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We're examining reasons for God's justice and his wisdom. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Video has gone viral showing animals at a US zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pimp. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. Well, you might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital, Paris, is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. Bet everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the 6 Disney resorts are in. Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise. Therefore, it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife. And then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
Elders in an Indonesian town are rewarded with live chickens if they get vaccinated for COVID-19. Officials in a town of Sipanas launched the program after the vaccination campaign faced a low turnout from the public. Many have been reluctant to receive a jab over various reasons. Some say they were afraid that they would die if they get vaccinated. Now it seems that the rewards they take have worked well, and more people are willing to get a shot. Officials in the Indonesian town say they go door to door to give the elderly jabs and chickens to show their appreciation.
Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. Wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongking village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Let's go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kalyuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo. Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He's now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. Two British artists have brought a combination of fun, art, and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rackage have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally, because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. At advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now, they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way the human beings are.
Hansen, a while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in its thousands.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia. Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Erromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers.
IRIB English Radio.